Let me begin by saying Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu to all of the members of my audience this morning. And I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to make these few minutes that we are going to spend with one another to be beneficial to us in this life and in the next life. The topic of my presentation is, as you can see on the screen, is about Sukuk as an instrument of the Islamic capital market. This is the outline of the presentation. I will start by giving overview of Islamic capital market. What exactly do we mean by an Islamic capital market? Then we proceed to the subject matter of today's lecture, the sukuk itself, by defining what is sukuk. Then we proceed to giving a sort of historical development of sukuk as an instrument of the capital market. Then we will talk briefly about the current size of the sukuk global market. Then we will move to classifications of sukuk, after which we shall talk about key differences between sukuk and what it aimed to Please, others are still speaking. Am I being heard? Okay. So we shall talk about classification differences between sukuk and bonds as another instrument of the capital market which is not Sharia compliant. And as a matter of fact, sukuk has actually come to serve as an alternative to bonds. Then we will talk about sukuk issuance itself, then sukuk trading, benefits of sukuk. And if we have enough time, I would like to share with you a practical experience of how sukuk is structured by way of talking of the FGN sukuk as a case study. Now let's begin by giving an overview of Islamic capital market. Market, like any market, just like any market that we are used to, a market is a meeting place for buyers and sellers. So the issue is not different even when we talk about a capital market. The only difference is that when we talk of commodity market that we are all used to, we are all familiar with, we know what is being offered for sale and what is being bought in a commodity market. You go to buy food provisions, you go to buy vehicles in a market where vehicles are being sold, and so on and so forth. So the only difference here is that when you come to a capital market, it's not a commodity market. No asset is being, or no commodity, so to speak, is being offered for sale. But what is being bought and sold is actually the capital itself, money. Is being sold and bought in the capital market. So that is just the difference between a commodity market and a capital market. Just like I told you that in a capital market, we have buyers and sellers, those who have capital to offer for sale, and those who are in need of the capital. Who are in need of the capital is actually usually government and corporate entities. They are the buyers in the capital market. While those who go there to invest their money, like you and I, or institutional investors, are actually the capital providers or the buyers. Now you will see a similar scenario playing out even in the banking sector. A corporate entity, a company, or even government may approach a bank for a loan facility. He's also looking for capital to invest. But the difference between what happens in the banking sector and what happens in the capital market lies in the absence of what we call financial intermediation. A bank intermediates between the capital provider and the investor in the banking sector and charges interest based on that, which will amount to the income of the bank. In the capital market, in a typical capital market, it is assumed that the relationship will be directly between the capital provider and the capital seeker. So this is the main difference between what happens in the banking sector, where also we can trade in capital, we can hover capital, we can invest in capital, but it has to be with a financial intermediary, which banks generally, the banks generally are playing that role. Okay. The key characteristic of a capital market instrument is there. Okay, this is another very important feature that will make us understand what we are going to talk about, that is Sukuk. When we talk of a market, we have instruments of that market. So one of the most important instruments of a capital market is Sukuk and Sharia compliant share of companies, especially when we talk of Islamic capital market. Islamic capital market is like any other market, but the only thing that differentiates it from a conventional capital market is the fact that whatever will be done in an Islamic capital market will be regulated based on the Sharia provisions. So whatever is not Sharia compliant has no place in an Islamic capital market. And that is why when we are talking of instruments of Islamic capital market, we'll be speaking of Sukuk, we'll be speaking of Sharia compliant shares. Mark this, please underline that. In the conventional market, shares generally are instruments of the capital market. But when it comes to an Islamic capital market, it's not all shares that can come to trade, or you can come to trade in all shares in an Islamic capital market. They must be Sharia compliant shares of companies. You have indices all over the world that tell us this company, its shares is Sharia compliant. Company B, its own shares are not Sharia compliant. The instrument of capital market generally, whether they are conventional or Islamic, are usually classified into two. Is either they are debt instruments or equity instruments. The truth of the matter is that this is one of the unique characteristics of Sukuk as an innovative instrument of the capital market. In capital market, you either have a debt instrument or equity instrument. Sukuk has come to be like a hybrid of the two. It combines the features, the characteristics of being a debt instrument and at the same time an equity instrument. And the bottom line here is that it has to be Sharia compliant because it's an instrument of an Islamic capital market. With this brief overview of a capital market generally, an Islamic capital market generally, I think we have a solid background now to move into our main subject matter for today, and that is Sukuk. I just want to be sure that I'm being followed by the audience. Am I? Okay. Alhamdulillah. So let's now move to the next one. What is Sukuk then? Sukuk is an Arabic word. It's a plural form of the word suk. Generally speaking, a suk in Arabic means a certificate. A certificate that is meant to document a right. If you have a right with somebody, whether it is a right arising from a sale contract, from a lease contract, from whatever, You can document that right by saying so, 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 has so, so, so right to the tune of so, so, so amount of money with me. And that will be your certificate that you hold as evidence of that right belonging to you over another party. So this is the literal meaning of sukuk. Technically, sukuk as defined by the Accounting and Auditing Organization of Islamic Financial Institutions based in Bahrain, that is AOFI. AOFI, I found the definition of AOFI to be a very straightforward one. That is why I have opted for that. It says, sukuk are certificates of equal value, representing undivided shares in the ownership of tangible assets, usufruct, and services, or in the ownership of the assets of particular projects or special investment activity. Let me try to simplify this technical import of what sukuk are. Sukuk are certificates, just like I told you, from the literal meaning of sukuk. It's a certificate, yes. Representing what? They must be certificate of equal value, meaning that if you have a unit of sukuk, it has to be of equal value with another unit of sukuk. If I hold a unit or 10 units of sukuk, and another person holds 10 units of sukuk, the amount that the 10 units of sukuk represent must be equal in value. So it's just like when we talk of shares, another instrument of the capital market. You cannot have a unit of sukuk for 10,000 naira, another one for 5,000 naira. They have to be of equal value. Now they represent undivided shares in the ownership of tangible assets. That is a key difference between sukuk and other instruments of the capital market. When we talk of bonds, for example, which sukuk has come to replace, bond is not Sharia compliant because it represents lending with interest. Why sukuk? The main difference between sukuk and bond is this one, asset. There must be that element of asset. It is not a matter of trading in money, but trading with money. That is how Ibn al-Qayyim al-Jawzi has aptly put it in stating the difference between what is Sharia compliant and what is not Sharia compliant. You see, it is allowed for us as Muslims to trade with money. We use money to trade, to buy and sell, but we do not trade in money. In the conventional parlance, all what happens is about trading in money. You issue a bond certificate to a government issues a bond certificate, and a corporate body issues a bond certificate for ₦1 million, $1 million, and when you buy a unit of that, of those certificates, it means they owe you that amount of money, which is payable at maturity, plus a well-known and specified and fixed amount of interest. In the case of sukuk, it has to be trading with money, meaning that money does not pass directly from the investor to the issuer of the certificate, and at maturity, the issue of certificate repaying the investor directly, it doesn't work that way. It's riba, it's interest. But for sukuk to work, there has to be an intermediary between the two. You use that money to purchase an asset. This asset you can sell to the issuer, and you can also lease to the issuer in any way that will make the asset to generate income. And you can also continue in that way to say, after a period of time, which we call maturity, I am not interested in keeping this asset. I'm an investor in capital market. I'm not interested in joining your company and belonging to be part of your government in perpetuity. I'm ready to dispose of this asset. Then there will be another arrangement for the same asset to be rebought by the issuer. You will resell the same asset back to the issuer, all in a Sharia compliant manner. So this is simply what sukuk is actually is in Islam. Now, a question arises here because I've been mentioning bond. Some people will find it convenient to say sukuk or Islamic bond. Is that correct? Well, yes and no. It may be and it may not be correct depending on the context. When we say an Islamic bond, all what is being, the message that is being passed here is for people to realize that sukuk did not just develop from a vacuum. It is a development. It was actually a product of a certain development. People who are used to bond, or what looks like bond, treasury bill, debenture, all these are working in the same way like bonds, which, like I told you, is a matter of issuing a certificate that will say, I've lent you so amount of money, government A, company B, and you will repay me back this capital that I've invested in your company or in your government after so number of years, plus so number of interest that you must have been paid periodically even before maturity. So that is bond, period. They would like to say, for people to understand what is sukuk, they will say it's an Islamic bond, meaning it's something like that works like a bond certificate, but it's Islamic because it is Sharia compliant. So that is what, but in actual sense, as you will see when we move further in this presentation, the two are too different. They are different in many ways. Bonds and sukuk are not the same, but just as a matter of convenience, people, when they say an Islamic bond, is just to draw our attention to the fact that it was bond that was declared, pronounced to be non-Sharia compliant by Sharia scholars, and they were challenged to come about with an alternative that be Sharia compliant, and this is how sukuk was actually brought. It's actually an innovation, a very commendable innovation of Sharia scholars, Muslim economists, Muslim financial experts, by bringing up this innovative instrument of the capital market, which is actually gaining many grounds all over the world today. Historical development, I will quickly rush through this, it's not so technical. When I told you, it's just a matter of developments that, the earlier one, the earlier slide. Move up, okay. So when did it start? Simply put, it started in the 1990s, when a company in Malaysia, Shell Malaysia, the oil company that is well known all over the world. We have Shell in Nigeria, we have Shell, I think the origin is from Holland, we have Shell in Malaysia and all over the world. So it was Shell Malaysia, we have to give that credit to the company and to the country that had that courage. It was a theory before. People were hypotheses, theories, it is possible, it is doable, but it requires someone to summon that courage of saying, let me put it to test. And it was Shell Malaysia that did that in 1990 by issuing the first corporate sukuk. In year 2001, it was the turn of Bahrain. Bahrain is a country also in Asia, an Arab country, that tried, also experimented the first issuance of sovereign sukuk. We shall come, I think the next slide will tell us more about these types of sukuk, what is corporate sukuk, what is sovereign sukuk, and the rest. So we don't waste time on this now. But just for us to know historical development, in 1990, in 2001, in 2009, there was a new development. Malaysia is a Muslim majority country, about more than 60% Muslim. Bahrain is almost 100% Muslim. So it's a landmark achievement that we had in 2009, that a company in the United States of America, where Muslims may not be, I don't know, but they must certainly be less than 5%. So it was General Electric as an American company that first issued also a corporate sukuk in 2009, coming from a non-Muslim majority country. Now came the turn of United Kingdom as the first ever government, this time around not a company, a government of a Western nation. United Kingdom issued another sovereign sukuk in 2014, and it was a very remarkable success as the issuance recorded more than 10 times over subscription. You know what that means? It means you are looking for one and people are ready to pay you 10. They showed a lot of interest in what you are offering. This is what we call oversubscription in sukuk. The oversubscription in 2014 of the UK sovereign sukuk was about 10 times. So a very remarkable success indeed. Nigeria joined the league. I'm jumping to the Nigerian case now because I know today's lecture has been organized mainly by Nigerians, although I do not have any out of doubt in my mind that others from other countries are also joining, are also following. Nigeria joined the League of Sovereign Sukuk Issuers in 2017. You will realize here, I did not start by mentioning corporate sukuk because that is a challenge for us in Nigeria. Up till today, we've not seen any company that will summon that courage, that kind of courage that was exhibited by Shell Malaysia in 1990. Up till now, no company has been able to exhibit such courage in Nigeria by issuing a corporate sukuk. So it's a challenge really for our industrialists, for our businessmen in Nigeria to look into that. It's very, very promising and it's a profitable venture. But Nigeria as a nation, sovereign state, just like the United Kingdom, just like Bahrain did in 2001 and UK did in 2014, Nigerian government also in 2017 tried the sukuk market with a 100 billion naira issuance. That is in the premises of maybe 300 million naira or so. So, and it was a very huge success. This encouraged the government to come back again in 2018 and issued another 100 billion naira sukuk, which was also very successful. This also further encouraged the government, it was supported by all across various divides, religious, tribes, regional, whatever. Everybody was supporting, including the non-Muslims. So this actually encouraged the federal government to also come back. It was planned to be in 2019, but for some logistical reasons, it couldn't happen until last month, May 2020. And this time around, they were more, they showed a higher level of interest by saying, why 100 billion again? Let's go for 150 billion naira. Let's see how it will happen, how it will play out. And surprisingly, this recent one recorded 446% over subscription, meaning that they tried to get 150 billion naira from investors. Investors who have had and have seen the result of sukuk in Nigeria in 2017, 2018, actually jumped at this golden opportunity and offered the government 669 billion 124. So instead of getting 150, they said, please take 669 and invest them in sukuk because you've seen the result. And these the entire amount was paid by Nigerians, no single foreign investor. So it was clearly 100% Nigerian investment by Nigerian investors, made up of Muslims and non-Muslims. So it actually is something that is pleasing, something that is very encouraging to every one of us that has one or two things to do with sukuk market in Nigeria, that we are actually moving in the right direction, just as the government has seen clearly that it is actually moving in the right direction and that it took a very good decision when it decided to issue sukuk 3 years ago. So that is about the historical development so far. Now, what is the total size? Sukuk started in 1990, I told you, this is 2020. The total size today, has surpassed $1 trillion, according to International Islamic Financial Markets report of 2019. They are yet to issue this year's report. The latest report issued in 2019, which they will report until December 2018. That is how it happens. In 2020, they will report until December 2019. They're still waiting for that. So the most recent report of the International Islamic Financial Market put the total size of global Sukuk market at $1,101,502,000,000. So it's a very huge amount. And it shows that Sukuk is actually a right step in a right direction. Talking about Africa generally, we've had some other African countries, not just Nigeria, South Africa, Ivory Coast, Gambia, Senegal, and Togo. These are some of the African countries that have also tried one way or the other the issuance of Sukuk as an instrument of the capital market. But Africa has done well, but we must quickly add here that the Sukuk powerhouse, that's how I put it here, the Sukuk powerhouse remains Malaysia and Gulf Cooperation countries, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and the rest. They are still leading in the Sukuk market. That is why I always prefer to call them Sukuk powerhouse, Malaysia and GCC countries. They are still leading. Turkey is also doing very fantastically well in this area, and so some other countries and some other companies and even in the West, in the Western world. So let's move to the next slide. The host, if you can help me remove this screen that comes on repeatedly saying waiting for the host to, I'm not admitting anybody. So if you can just get rid of it, because it's disturbing my slide here, as you can observe. Is that taken, Mr. Host? Okay, please try to do something to that so that it doesn't waste our time. Okay. Now we've understood, I suppose we've understood, at least we've had a basic knowledge of what is Sukuk, the historic development, and even the current size, where it is presently. Now we are going a bit technical now. What are the main classifications of Sukuk? How many types of Sukuk do we have? You must have been hearing of this Sukuk, that Sukuk. So this is a bit technical, but I will have to simplify them as much as I can. In the spirit of simplification that I said, I've tried to further break down the classifications into three major headings, using three different parameters to do that. So we'll first of all take the parameter, the most important parameter is the Sharia underlying contract. No Sukuk can operate without having a Sharia contract that will serve as the framework, that as the foundation, as the basis. Without a Sharia contract, that is a contract that is known to Sharia, that is pronounced to be valid in Sharia, must be used to structure a Sukuk issuance or Sukuk instrument. So that is the first parameter that we are going to use. The second parameter that will give us another headline or subheading is to look at Sukuk, different types of Sukuk based on different types of issuers or originators. Those who issue Sukuk are not the same. So based on this, you can also have different forms or types of Sukuk. And lastly, just like we talk about having underlying contract, another very important critical element of Sukuk, I told you in the beginning, is to have an asset, is the main characteristic of Sukuk. That is what differentiates it from a conventional instrument where money goes directly from one end to another with a promise to pay interest. Here, there must be an intermediary. That intermediary is the asset. That will make it, as Ibn Qayyim said, and I quote him, let me quote him one again, we will trade with money, not trading in money. Now let's go back to the first parameter. Sharia underlying contract. These will give us at least five different types of sukuk. We have lease-based sukuk. I told you these are based on Sharia contract. When we say lease-based, it means it's using a contract that is known as an ijara. An ijara is a lease contract. And based on these, you can structure so many varieties of your sukuk using an underlying contract of an ijara. You can have a direct ijara sukuk under the lease base. You can have, like we have in Nigeria presently, we are using ijara to mausufin fizimba, that is forward ijara. It's not an instant ijara, it's a forward one, because it is being used to structure sukuk for an asset that is not existing presently, but will exist. So it's also possible to structure a sukuk even when the asset is not readily available. But instead of using direct ijara, you have to use other forms like forward ijara or ijara to mausufin fi dhimma. Then we can have ijara to muntahiya bi tamlik. It's a form of lease that will hand in ownership. So these are various forms of sukuk that you can use one single contract of Sharia, that is Aqdul Ijara, the contract of Ijara to have. The second one is sale-based sukuk. This will use the contract of sale, al-bayr, contract of sale, Aqdul Bay is another very potent instrument of structuring sukuk in the Islamic capital market. On this one, you can have what we call salam sukuk, you can have istisna sukuk, you can have murabaha sukuk, and so on and so forth. All these are coming from one single contract, and that is bay'u, aqdul bay'i, or sale as a contract, a valid contract, a non-contract to Islamic law. Number three, you can have partnership-based sukuk. Partnership-based sukuk or equity-based sukuk. It means it's a form of sukuk that will behave like shares. You know, when you talk of lease, you talk of sale, they behave like a debt instrument. Not typical debt instrument, but they behave like debt instrument. We shall come to that. And that is why some people are still questioning why we can have a fixed income when we talk of Sharia compliance sukuk. It's possible when you are using lease or you are using sale, because you can fix your income, you can fix your rental, you can fix your purchase or sale price when you are talking of Aqdul Bay. But same is not possible when we are talking of partnership. Partnership is what you enter into, hoping to gain any amount of profit that will be distributed among you, the partners. It may be more, it may be less. You can never say in the beginning. So it's an ex post, not ex ante. The first two are ex ante, why this one is ex post. You have to wait until you generate the profit, then you distribute among the partners. Under this heading, you can have what we call mudaraba sukuk. You can have musharaka sukuk. You can have other subdivisions of mudaraba and musharaka. Mudaraba muntahiya bitamlik. Musharaka mutanaqisa. Or musharaka muntahiya bitamlik. And so many other varieties that can come under one single contract of Sharia, and that is aqdu al-sharika, the partnership, the contract of partnership under Islamic law. You can have agency-based sukuk. What is an agency-based sukuk? It's an agency-based which will use the contract of agency under Islamic law. We call it al-wakala, aqdul wakala. So all you do is to be an agent to the investors and invest in whatever they have contributed. So under this one, we have in the market pure wakala sukuk, agency straightforward sukuk. We have wakala bil istithmar, is a kind of restricted wakala, not an open-ended wakala sukuk. So all this would come under agency-based sukuk. And finally, we have hybrid sukuk. What's our time now? Okay. Hybrid sukuk. Hybrid simply means you can take the first and the second one and match them to produce a structure. It's possible. Take lease and sale. Take partnership plus lease. Take agency plus lease plus. So it's an hybrid. It's not just using one single contract of Sharia, but using more than one, two or three or more if possible to bring about an innovative structure. You know, the problem a financial market is usually facing is that you cannot continue to roll out the same product every time, every year. So people are looking for innovation in this market, and this is where hybrid sukuk is actually helping. People are used to lease base, they are used to sale base. You have an investor, you have a company, you have a government that is looking for something that is new, that will be more attractive in the market. So you have to go for hybrid sukuk that you will try through your expertise, your competence in Sharia and the related fields to come about with a hybrid form of sukuk that will use more than one contract, one Sharia contract. So these are the classifications of the types of sukuk based on their Sharia underlying contract. Let's move to another parameter, a benchmark. Issuers, who are those issuing sukuk? Based on this, we have three different sukuk. I've mentioned in my introduction that Shell Malaysia issued corporate sukuk, Bahrain, UK, Nigeria, they are issuing sovereign sukuk. What do we mean by this? They are different. When the issuer is a sovereign entity, a nation, a state, a country with sovereign power, like Nigeria, like United Kingdom, Bahrain, Malaysia as a government, not a company in Malaysia, Saudi Arabia as a government, not a company in Saudi Arabia, and so on and so forth, then whatever sukuk such an entity issues is called a sovereign sukuk. It has a lot of attraction for people. People usually rush to buy sovereign sukuk because of the high level of reliability and creditworthiness and trustworthiness of a sovereign entity. We have quasi-sovereign sukuk. Quasi-sovereign sukuk is a sukuk that is issued by an entity that is linked to a sovereign authority or a sovereign entity. For example, in Nigeria today, we have NNPC. We all know NNPC is a company, is a corporation, but it's not like any other corporation, not like any other company. You can see a difference between Dangote Group, as big as Dangote Group is, and NNPC. What is the difference? NNPC is owned by a sovereign state, Nigeria. So it gives it more attraction, more reliability. When NNPC issues a sukuk, it will be called a quasi-sovereign sukuk. So quasi-sovereign sukuk are issued by companies with links or companies that are owned by sovereign entities. And finally, we have corporate sukuk. That is, companies generally, whether big or small, can come to the financial market to say, I need more capital and I want an instrument that will be Sharia compliant. Then they will introduce to him sukuk as the suitable instrument, and the company may go for that. A lot of companies in the world are doing that every year, every month today. Like I told you, it was started in 1990 by Shell Malaysia, and up till today, most of the sukuk that we have in the market are actually corporate sukuk. They are far more in number than either sovereign or quasi-sovereign sukuk. That is what I said is a challenge for us in Nigeria. We need someone to summon courage in our companies to try it. Just as it has succeeded, Nigeria succeeded in sovereign sukuk, that's a good insight for any corporate entity to see that it is going to be successful when it tries corporate sukuk as well. Because the environment is one, the business environment is one. So that is about divisions or classifications of sukuk using issuers or originator as a parameter. Let's move to the third one, underlying asset. Yes, even the asset that we are using, they are not the same. That is why we have asset-backed sukuk, we have asset-based sukuk, we have asset-covered sukuk, we have asset-light sukuk, we have blended asset sukuk, and many other. We have convertible sukuk, we have contingent convertible sukuk, we have perpetual sukuk, we have subordinate. You see, people, I told you, it's a field of innovation. People are just coming up one, coming up with one or another form of innovative structure. But these six or five that I mentioned here are the major ones. So they are the major. Let me explain them briefly. Sorry. Asset-backed sukuk and asset-based sukuk. Interestingly, all these forms of sukuk, we shouldn't. I'm not creating an impression that they are all Sharia compliant. No, and that is why there is a need for strong Sharia governance in any sukuk issuance. You need a team of Sharia scholars to look into your structure, study your document, your contract, and thereby determine whether your structure is Sharia compliant or not. So it's not taken for granted that because something is called sukuk, either lease-based or agency-based or sovereign or corporate or this or that, as soon as it is sukuk, it is Sharia compliant. No, it is not like that. I'm not creating that impression, and I want myself to be gotten clearly on that. It may be named sukuk, but for it to become Sharia compliant, there is a need for a strong Sharia governance structure to be put in place. You have Sharia committee. Sometimes you have many layers of Sharia governance. You have a Sharia committee with the company, if it's a corporate sukuk. Then when it comes to the regulator, security and exchange commission, there must be another Sharia committee that will take a second look at the whole structure to determine whether it is or it is not Sharia compliant. So underlying asset, the same thing goes with this one. Not every one of these types is Sharia compliant. In fact, there are some of them that are clearly non-Sharia compliant. Asset-backed sukuk, in most cases, they are Sharia compliant. But asset-based sukuk, in most cases, they are not Sharia compliant. You can see that clearly now. What is an asset-backed? Asset-backed, simply put, means that when you have no sukuk will operate without an asset. But because we are dealing with financial experts who may try to circumvent the rule of Sharia in achieving their aims and objectives. What started the sukuk market is what I listed here as number one. Asset back. You want to issue a sukuk, here is your asset. This is your asset. Okay, the asset will be transferred to the investors. They will own it. At maturity, you will rebuy back your asset. If you fail to rebuy, if you default in payment, because they are the owners of the asset, they can have recourse to that asset. They can take control of the asset and sell it to any interested party. So this is asset backed. When investors have full ownership of the asset and can have recourse to that asset in cases of default or non-payment at maturity. So that is clearly Sharia compliant. But as time moved on, they invented what they call asset-based sukuk. Yes, there is asset, clearly Sharia compliant asset. But it will be a clause. A clause in the contract will say that in any case of default, or non-payment at maturity, investors do not have recourse to the asset, but their recourse will be to the originator. That is the originator that will be held responsible for whatever is outstanding, either the principal, the payment, which is the amount of investment, or the dividend that they were expected to get periodically. So under no circumstance will they be allowed to take control of the underlying asset. So scholars have pronounced that clearly to be non-Sharia compliant because it shows that there is no transfer of ownership in the real sense of it. And transfer of ownership is a very key element of sukuk. That is what makes it trading in with money, not in money. They also came up with asset-covered sukuk. Asset-covered sukuk is like asset-based sukuk, but with a difference. What is that difference? In the legal parlance, when you have an asset-based sukuk, it means legally that whoever is holding those your sukuk certificate, sukuk holders, they will rank pari passu. They are at an equal level with all of your creditors. They have no preferential position or treatment over and above your other creditors. You are indebted to them, you're supposed to pay them, just like maybe you took a loan from a bank, maybe you bought a commodity from another company. So you owe a lot of people, a lot of entities, you owe them. When you default, it means, because they don't have, look at it, they don't have recourse to the asset. They cannot take control of that asset. It means they have to wait like all other creditors. In law, we say they rank pari passu with other creditors. They are not above any other creditor of the issuer. So having felt the danger inherent in that, they came up with asset-covered sukuk, which will create a form of security for sukuk holders in the sense that although they don't have recourse to the asset, but they are regarded as secured creditors. They are regarded as secured creditors, meaning that in any event of default or dissolution of the issuing company or issuing entity, it means that they will be the one, they will have what you call lien in law. They will have a charge on that particular asset before all other creditors. If the asset is sold, it is their own debt that will first be settled before they think of other creditors. So it gives them a kind of upper hand over and above other creditors, unlike what happens in the asset base. Likewise, this one is also not Sharia compliant because it's clear in that one too. Despite giving them a form of security, what we need in sukuk is not security. We are not talking of loan. We are not talking of debt. We are talking of investment, ownership that will lead to income generation. So that has not happened here. And that is why it is also not Sharia compliant. Mr. Hosa, this one is blocking my view. Two participants raised hands. Can't you remove all these? No, it's not. So it's still in my screen. Anyway, the next one, you cannot see, but I will read it, is asset-light sukuk. What is an asset-light sukuk? Usually, what you use to structure a sukuk is a tangible asset. It's an asset that has physical existence. Like Nigeria, roads, and some other countries, airports, seaports, and the rest. So these are tangible assets that you can say, oh, these are the assets, tangible, that in any event of default or whatever, we can take control of. But a lot of companies showed interest in issuing sukuk, and they don't have those tangible assets. So they resort to what we call asset-like sukuk by using intangible assets. A company tried to issue sukuk using what? Airtime voucher. Like a network provider now may want to get money from the capital market and want to use sukuk as a Sharia compliant instrument. What will it offer as its own underlying assets with airtime voucher? People can call for so number of hours, or people can use internet for so gigabytes. So it's not tangible, it's intangible assets. And some people are using even their debt, owed them by other entities, which we call technically their receivables. they will securitize those receivables to stand as an underlying asset. In most cases also, assets like Sukuk are non-Sharia compliant. Then we have blended asset Sukuk. What is blended asset Sukuk? I've been realized that asset like Sukuk cannot fly. A lot of scholars will say no. How can you use that one? It will create, especially when you are using debt. In many jurisdictions, you will run into a problem not at the primary market, but at the secondary market. Secondary market of Sukuk, when you offer your certificate for sale on the exchange. So you cannot exchange a debt. There are restrictions to how you can trade in debt, not what you have readily available. So an asset like Sukuk, when you use your debt hold you by others, your receivables, it means you are trading in debt, and this is a very controversial issue. So they now resulted to blended asset. Blended asset means, okay, well, we have a little amount of tangible assets, but it's not sufficient. A company is looking at issuing a $1 billion Sukuk, but all what it has as a tangible asset can only stand for 300 million, for example, or 100 million. So they said, okay, can't we use the tangible asset and add our intangible? We have so many intangible assets that we can use. Even if we got 10 billion, we have intangible assets. So that is how blended asset Sukuk came on board. It's a mixture of tangible and intangible asset. This can be Sharia compliant, but there are rules to be followed. There are rules to be followed. How many percentage of intangible will be acceptable, and how many percentage of tangible will be acceptable? Because of time, we will not be able to go into those details now. Now, this is very important. We've gone through Sukuk, their types, their market, the size. Like I told you, it's always is good for us to remember that Sukuk is coming to replace something. And a lot of people are used to that in the market, bonds. They are buying bonds, they are buying treasury bills, they are buying debentures. So if you want them to understand clearly what has Sukuk come to serve, the interest that Sukuk has come to serve, and why Sukuk is actually Sharia compliant, because some people will still raise questions. That to me, they look alike. They are almost the same thing. There's no difference. Now you will see the differences now. These are the key differences between Sukuk as a Sharia compliant instrument and bonds as a conventional or non-Sharia compliant instrument. One, their nature. We have 6 more minutes. Okay. 6 more minutes of 1 hour, you mentioned?
No. What's the time? 6 more minutes, 3 or 4.
Okay. So nature, let's look at the very nature of the two. So bonds represent IOU, that is, it's a debt instrument. Interest bearing obligation, not just a debt instrument, but it's a debt that is interest bearing. No company, no government will issue bond certificate without adding the amount of interest that is payable. Otherwise, nobody will buy from them. The government will not say, give me 100 million naira, and after 7, 8, 10 years, I will pay you back 100,000 naira, 100,000 million. That is the same amount. In the conventional world, nobody will take that from them. So they have to issue it to be an interest-bearing instrument. Now, Sukuk. What is the difference? Sukuk does not represent debt. I'm saying it clearly. Sukuk does not represent loan. It actually represents investment. That is why it amounts to proportionate ownership in the underlying asset. The asset that is used as an underlying asset, it means if you are 1 million investors, all of you have bought a particular portion of that asset. Like the roads in Nigeria now, the airport in Malaysia, the seaport in other places, that were built using Sukuk funds, schools that were built using Sukuk funds, like we have in Osun State in Nigeria. It means it's an undivided, go back to the definition of Sukuk, it's an undivided, meaning nobody can come to claim a class of those schools as being its own. Or nobody can come to claim a particular kilometer of the federal government road to be its own. It's an undivided share. But all of you collectively, you have owned, if you pay 10,000, that means you have owned the worth of 10,000 in that asset. If you pay 100,000, it means your ownership amounts to the worth of 100% of that asset, and so on and so forth. So the nature, the very nature of the two instrument is different. Pricing. Bonds pricing is based on credit rating of the issuer. This is very fundamental. If the government wants to issue a bond of 1 billion, 2 billion, 1 trillion, nobody will ask it, do you have an asset that is sufficient to cover it? Nobody will ask. All what the investors will look for in the capital market is to ask you of your credit rating, whether you will be able to pay or not. If you are rated as AAA+, they will rush to you, whether you have any assets or not. But if you have B- or C or whatever, poor credit rating, no matter what amount of asset that you have to offer, in bond market, people do not look at your asset. So that is bonds. When we talk of sukuk, sukuk are priced based on the value of the asset back in there. You cannot come to the sukuk market with an asset that is worth $1 billion and say you want to issue sukuk of $2 billion. It's not acceptable because it is an investment in that asset. And like we said in the nature, it means everybody owns a particular, a certain, a known, but undivided percentage of that. So it has to match. Pricing must match the asset back in there. Number three, asset-related expenses. There's another difference in the asset-related. Bondholders are not concerned. Even when a government issues a bond and tells you want to use your money to build an airport, to build a seaport, to build a refinery. Maintenance of the refinery, maintenance of the school, of the seaport, you are less concerned as a bondholder. Yours is, I will be counting, my bond will terminate, will mature in 6 years. Oh, this is the 5th year, it remains 1 year. At the end of the 6th year, I bring my certificate, pay me my principal. You have been paying the interest, this is what remains of the interest, and that's all. So asset-related expenses are not the concern of a bondholder. In sukuk holders, no. They may be affected by asset-related expenses. As we shall come to talk about that, if we have more time, like in Ijara sukuk, for example, when you lease your own property to the issuer, we have two forms of maintenance, major maintenance and minor or routine maintenance. A major maintenance is on you as the owner, as an investor, you are the owner, while the user, the lessee, a government, a company, will only be responsible for the minor maintenance of the asset. So they are concerned because they own. Another difference, transfer. When we come, all number one, two, three are related to the primary market of sukuk or bonds. When it comes to the secondary market, when bonds and sukuk are traded on the exchange at the exchange market, what is being sold? If you take your certificate, bond certificate, to an exchange market to sell, you are actually selling debt because they owe you money, no asset. But when sukuk is sold, when you take your sukuk that you bought now, you don't need it again, you want to sell it to a third party, you are not selling debt, you are actually selling your ownership interest in that asset. Remember I told you, is it 10%, 10,000 worth, 100,000 worth? It is that ownership interest or right that you're actually exchanging when you go to sell your sukuk or certificate at the secondary market. Assets. Well, in bonds, you may not have assets to back them. Like I told you, it doesn't matter whether you have assets or not. You need money. What is your credit rating? Take the money because you have a very high credit rating. We don't have, we won't give you because your credit rating is poor. That's all. But when we are talking of sukuk, it's fundamental. No asset, no sukuk. There must be asset backing the sukuk. Not only that, the asset must be Sharia compliant. You cannot come with a brewery as an asset that you want to use to issue sukuk. It's not acceptable. So and so on and so forth. We have four more, but I think these are very important. Even if we are going to stop at this, it's sufficient for us to see the differences between Sukuk and bonds. Number six, in terms of the return, the dividend of bonds, the dividend of Sukuk, coupon payment in the form of interest. When you have a bond certificate, after every 33 months, 6 months, according to your agreement, you will receive a lot from your bank that, oh, my issuer, that is my debtor, has paid so-so-so percentage of interest for this period of time. And you continue counting like that. It's also a periodic payment when you come to Sukuk, but not as interest. It's usually as renters or percentage of generated profit. If it is a lease-based, a sale-based, that will also culminate in leasing the asset. The user, who is the issuer at the same time, is now paying renters, not interest. You agree on what is payable as rentals of your property that you lease to him. So what is being paid, because people are mixing this up, that the same way they pay interest, 6 months, 13 months, but they are two different things. Interest in bonds, why rentals in Sukuk? Or if it is a partnership-based Sukuk, like we told you, we can have a partnership-based Sukuk. It is not even a matter of rental. It's a matter of a percentage of generated profit, like Mudaraba Musharaka. They will look at the profit made, generated at the end of the 6 months or 1 year or 3 months, then they will calculate your own percentage of that profit. If what you have bought of the Sukuk amounts to 5%, they will send you 5% of the generated profit. Next time, your 5% may be 10,000 naira today. It may be less, it may be more when next they are distributing profit, because it's a partnership based Sukuk, which will look to the generated profit before distribution. Number seven, principal repayment. This is very clear as a difference between the two. At maturity, a bondholder will hand an irrevocable obligation. No excuses. At the end of the term, the maturity of the bond issued, then you have to pay the same amount as principal that the investor has paid or the bondholder has paid. Some people will say, even in Sukuk it happens that way, but there's a difference. Let me tell you now. Yes, at maturity, Sukuk is usually structured in such a way that the issuer will buy back the asset. And in most cases, especially in lease and sale base, in most cases, it will be agreed upon that it is the same amount of money that was paid to purchase it in the beginning that will be paid. But the difference here is that there is no guarantee of that capital. In the event that the asset is destroyed, if an asset is not available, then there is no way you can claim to sell an asset and hand, because what you are handing at maturity is not principal, it's a purchase or sale price, whichever way around you call it. And it's only when that asset is available, exists, that you can have that right of claiming. So it shows that there is a very high level of liability being assumed by Sukuk holders, not just waiting for the end of the term and claiming repayment of their principal as in bonds. Number eight, use of produce. No specific requirement when it comes to bonds. It may be used to finance any needs. It's only for a company to say, I need money. What's your business in asking the company, what are you going to use the money for? It's not your business. A government says, I need $2 billion, I need $3 billion. So if you have, you give them what you have as a loan, repayable with interest. But even if they say originally that what you are going to use this money for is to build a new airport, and after getting your money, they decided they want to use it to prosecute an election, you cannot take them to any court. It's only for you to be waiting until when it is time for repayment for them to pay you, and that will be all. That is not possible under Sukuk. Sukuk must be used to finance specifically mentioned and identified projects. You must have identified the project. The sukuk produce must be channeled to those projects. That is another very key difference. And finally, the parties in bonds are usually straightforward. The issuer and the subscribers, the bondholders, the issuer, be it a government, a corporate body, or whatever. In sukuk, they are usually three. We have the issuer, which we sometimes call the originator or the obligor. Then you have at the other end, the investors or subscribers. But usually there is what we call a specific or special purpose vehicle, an SPV. An SPV will be created for one single purpose. And that is what we call bankruptcy remoteness. Is a way of creating security, is a way of assuring the investors in sukuk market that, look, this is a company that is looking for sukuk to finance so project, a refinery, a complex of classrooms, and so on and so forth. Whatever happens to that company tomorrow, if it goes bankrupt tomorrow, no creditor of that bank will have any right on your asset financed by sukuk. It has been shielded. It has been ring-fenced. So an SPV will take over the asset from the parent company before issuing sukuk certificate and getting subscription from investors. It creates what we call bankruptcy remoteness advantage to sukuk holders in the sukuk market. My dear brothers and sisters, I think with this we have talked generally about what is important about sukuk, the concept, the function. What we have not been able to talk of is issuance, who can issue sukuk, what asset can be used to issue sukuk, the issue of sukuk trading at the secondary market. But I think if you go to question and answer session, some of you may raise questions that will force us to touch on those areas as well. But let me mention this one. It's very, very it's simple and direct, particularly for us in Africa. We have a peculiar advantage as Africans to key into sukuk, Muslims and non-Muslims. Yes, sukuk is specifically advantageous to Africans for two reasons that I've identified here. One, sukuk has developmental advantage and contribution to the restructure of the economy. Unlike other parts of the world, the developing and the developed world, Africa is in dire need of infrastructure development. The last time I read about a report from African Development Bank, it says Africa will need, maybe $360 billion or so, if it is to bring its infrastructure to the level that will be comparable, not to developed world, but to some developing world in other climes. When you look at budget, look at the income, look at the GDP, look at the expenses of African countries put together, this fund is beyond our capacity to generate. And that is why we need to look for innovative ways of getting money. We can even get money through sukuk from non-Africans when we issue international sukuk to develop our infrastructure. So we are specifically in need of this because of the development advantage. When others are looking at other areas, we are still in need of development to develop our infrastructure. It is the bane of our problem today in Nigeria and elsewhere. We have a very poor infrastructure infrastructural facilities are very poor, and we need to develop them. And Sukuk is very, very important. You know, as I told you, it is a matter of identifying a particular project. Then you agree on a number of years. At the end of it, you see that the project has been developed. So it's a very good, step that needs to be taken by most African countries because of its developmental assembly. The second one is also peculiar to us as Africans, unless we are deceiving ourselves. Corruption is anywhere in the world. Corruption in Africa is more than what is obtainable in most of the countries in other climes. The Sukuk that you are talking of is very, very effective in fighting corruption. Why? When you want to issue Sukuk, it's not just government saying, give us money, IMF, give us money, or even you investors, local investors, give us money. And after getting the money, they will now say, this is what you want to use the money for, or divert the money to another purpose. If it is the money that was given based on loan that will attract interest, there's nobody can take them to any court. So they are free to use the money in their best interest. Whether it will serve the interest of the populace or not, that's a different question. But when it is about Sukuk, it is often unthinkable. The diversion of Sukuk fund is unthinkable. Because first and foremost, you underline an asset that you want to develop. And you show this clearly, you convince your investors, this is how we are going to do it. In fourth year, this is the milestone that we will achieve. In the second year, this is the milestone. All this must be clearly stated in your prospectus. They will read it, they will digest it, understand it, agree with you before giving you money. So the Sukuk is structured in that way that you cannot then divert the money into another thing and call it Sukuk. Sukuk for what? When you say Sukuk for road, you cannot go and build a hospital. If you want the hospital, you come to the market and say, this is a Sukuk for hospital. Talk less of diverting Sukuk fund to even other purposes that are far, far, far less important, or that corruption embedded. So it is also very, very important for us. Let me give an example. I had wanted to give you the structure. This is the structure of the FGN Sukuk. But because of the insufficient time that you have. But let me tell you something peculiar about something that it is interesting to know about the FGN Sukuk. In the beginning, when it was time, when people contributed the 100 billion naira in 2017, and the contractors were invited, we have had the money now. The money is in a designated account in the Central Bank of Nigeria. So you can now go to the site and start working. They thought it was business as usual, that just issue check for us to mobilize us to go. Then after a while, they would say we couldn't or we manage. But they told them, no, they said the Sukuk doesn't work that way. CBN will not release a dime of this money until the trustees. We have a trustee, two companies serving as trustees for investors. They will have to certify the work. You will go and work. They will see the level of work, the milestone we will give you. If it is 10 kilometers road, we can divide it into 10. Go and do 1 kilometer. They will come. They will certify it. They will see that it has been done to the satisfactory level. Then they will issue you a pass. With that pass, you will come to us and we will then direct the CBN to give you your money for the first milestone. You go to the second milestone. When you complete it, the trustees who are representing the owners of the money, the investors, will come and check, will come and investigate. They will be satisfied that you have done the second milestone. Then we will get a pass from them. Then we will direct the CBN to pay you. And that is how you can see the roads have been built now without any problem. And we hope we don't have any problem, inshallah. But if we keep to the rules, there will be no problem, inshallah. Because Sukuk is very clear. It's for a particular asset that must be developed using the proceeds of that Sukuk. On this note, I want to once again appreciate the organizers today's event. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala count this for us and for them as a worthy act of ibadah. And we also pray that Almighty Allah continue to give us the courage to learn more and more about different aspects of our religion, including this one that has to do with finances. It's not enough that I have prayed, I have good aqidah, which are the basis. Aqidah, usuluddin, is the basis of our religion. But there are other questions that we will be subjected to on the day of resurrection. And one of those questions is, according to a authentic hadith of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, is that somebody will be asked about his money. Where has he acquired the money? How did he acquire the money? And how has he spent the money? So we have to pay attention to what comes in and what goes out in the name of business ventures, business investment, and the rest, because we are going to accountable for that on the day of resurrection. Wassalamu alaikum wa sallallahu wa sallam wa baraka ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Amen. Okay, I agree with you, my dear brother. Okay, so let's share the screen again. Yes. Okay. Where is it? It's not showing. Okay. The next one. Okay. Can you see the screen now? Sukuk structuring. FGN Sukuk as a case study. We can see it? Okay. So this is the structure that is being used for the FGN Sukuk. The first issuance, the second issuance, and even the third issuance, all are following the same pattern. No significant difference. So this is the structure. You can see the structure, if it is clear enough for you to see, it has about 14 steps. And those steps must be followed minutely from 1 to 14. You cannot jump any step if you want to have a valid sukuk issuance. So this is the breakdown. Let me now read for you. You can just read from the screen yourself. The first step is that the federal government of Nigeria issues a letter of allocation of specific sections of land to the issuer or the trustee. You know, I mentioned trustee a short while ago, for construction and rehabilitation of identified roads. This will be carried out through the Federal Ministry of Works and Housing, which is the supervising ministry on those generally, because the sukuk in Nigeria presently, FGN sukuk, is being used to finance key economic roads in the entire 6 geopolitical zones, in all geopolitical zones. If you travel to the southeast, south-south, southwest, northwest, northeast, north-central, you will see sukuk roads all over the places. After this, the Federal Government of Nigeria, through the same ministry, will execute a forward ijara agreement with the issuer trustee to lease the roads that are to be constructed. Matthew, I told you when we discussed the lease-based sukuk that is using ijara as an underlying contract. I did say you can have a straightforward direct ijara, and you can have an ijara to mausufin fezimba, which can be literally translated as being a forward ijara. This is what you have used in Nigeria. The reason being very simple. The roads are not in existence, at least in a status that will make them usable. And this is the whole essence of coming to the sukuk market. So the only structure that will work in that way, and that is being done all over the world, and it is Sharia compliant, is that to have what we call a forward ijara. Forward ijara, in a simpler term, let's say you want to rent an apartment now, and the building is still under construction. It has not been completed. You approach the landlord saying, I'm interested in taking your apartment. You know, I'm still developing it. I don't have money to complete the development. No problem, sir. Can I pay my rent now? Can I pay you if it is a pure rent now? I will pay you in advance so that you use my money to do what? To develop the apartment. Then I will use the apartment based on what I've paid, and you will all sign ijara contract from there. You will not wait until when the building is completed. So this is what FGN, Federal Government of Nigeria, will do at this level. It must execute a forward ijara agreement even before the construction of those roads. Number three, then a unilateral purchase undertaking will be executed by the Federal Government of Nigeria to purchase the roads from the issuer or trustee at maturity. The issuer or trustee here are the ones representing the investors. You know, you are talking of investors in millions. Nigerian investors were in millions in all the previous issuances of sukuk, and so it usually be in any client. So it's difficult for you to invite the hundreds of millions or tens of millions of investors to a meeting every time to come and invest the road, come and see whether they have built this road or not, hundreds of millions to come and invest and to come and inspect. So that is why the structure allows for trustees that will be representing the interest of the investors. So it is with these trustees. Fragment doesn't need to get signature of hundreds of millions of investors for them to sign that we are signing lease ijara, we lease contract with you, we are signing a purchase undertaking with you. It's not feasible. But when they have a trustee, just one or two companies, so it will work that way. That's exactly what we have done. So a purchase undertaking will come, is a unilateral, which meaning that it is the federal government that is taking that undertaking that, don't worry, I know at the end of 7 years, what are you going to use the roads for? You are not interested in going the roads perpetually as investors. I will buy the roads from you again. Number four, the issuer or trustee declares a trust over the roads in favor of the sukuk holders under a declaration of trust deed and appoint, okay, these are the trustees, FBN Quest, owned by First Bank of Nigeria, and STL Trustees, that's another company, delegate, we call them delegate trustees, to carry out its functions as trustee under the trust. A trust will be declared over the roads, over the asset itself, in favor of the sukuk holders. So when you understand the law of trust as it operates, is a concept that has its basis in the English common law. But since there's nothing wrong with its application Sharia-wise, it was accommodated. It's just a matter of saying the real owners, the true owners, are the investors. But since it is impossible for all of them to be carried along all the time, we will hold the legal title as trustees, and they will be the beneficial owners of the, if it is at this level alone, there's nothing wrong in that in Sharia. And that is why it was accommodated. Number five, on the back of this contract, the trustee or issuer issues dematerialized investment certificate to investors in an offer of subscription and fund. What this is saying is as simple as we will issue certificate. If you have bought 10,000 units, you will get a certificate of 10,000 units. If you have bought one unit, which is just, I think, 1,000 naira or 10,000 naira, you will get a certificate, a SOC. Remember, in the definition of sukuk, is a certificate. We will issue those certificates. The issuer or trustee will issue the certificate. The issuer or trustee enters into construction also on behalf of the investors. It will enter into a construction agency agreement with the Federal Ministry of Works and Housing to appoint contractors to construct, supervise the road construction. Because the sukuk in Nigeria is being used for roads, and you see, it is not roads cannot be subjected to trial and error, that every contractor should come and try whether it can construct the road or not. So the solution is to go to the ministry that knows, that has the know-how of how roads are being constructed and are being maintained in Nigeria, and that is the Federal Ministry of Works. It knows the competent contractors. It is in the know of how to maintain those roads. All what will be done here is that it is not doing it for itself now, but it is doing it as an agent of the investors, being represented by the trustee. And this is what I mentioned earlier on, that in sukuk, whatever happens to asset is of concern to the owners, to the sukuk holders, because the major maintenance is on them, while the minor maintenance is on the user of the Federal Government of Nigeria. Number seven, it also enters into a service agency agreement. So the first one is construction. Number six is to construct. Number seven is to maintain. So all these maintain major, you see now, major repairs, because that is the responsibility of the investors. The minor repairs are not their concern. Whoever rents a property, an asset, a house, a room, a road, as is using it, you have to maintain it, the routine maintenance. You have to sweep it, you have to clean it. If a bulb goes off, you have to replace it, and so on and so forth. But if it is a major repair, then it will be the responsibility of the sukuk holder as the owners of those roads. But sukuk holder, there are millions, like I said. The trustee is not in the know of how to maintain, how to construct. They have to engage the Federal Ministry of Works as an agent to do that for them. The issuer trustee pays the contractors through the Federal Ministry of Works and Housing for the construction rehabilitation of roads from the sukuk proceeds after the work done by the contractors are certified by the Federal Ministry of Works and Housing and the delegate trustees. Alhamdulillah, I've said this while I was talking about the key differences between sukuk and bonds. It's not business as usual. Federal Ministry of Works and Housing, their engineers will come to inspect the roads. Not only that, the delegate trustees who are actually representing the interests of the investor, the sukuk holders, must also come to inspect if a contractor claims to have completed any milestone of those roads before he or she gets paid of the work he or she claimed to have done. The contractors, number nine, deliver the completed roads. If the roads are now completed, it will be delivered to the issuer or trustee through the, look at this now, it's not delivering to the federal government. You know why? Because federal government has not come into the picture now as the lessee. It has to wait until when the road is ready for use before it can take the lease of this. So the delivering is between the contractors now and the trustees who are actually representing the investors. Number 10, after that, the issuer trustee will now be the one to say, okay, Federal Government of Nigeria, the roads are ready for use. I want to lease it for you. Then it will deliver the roads to the Federal Government of Nigeria as lessee. From that point, the Federal Government pays periodic rentals for the use of the roads to designated repayment account. Is another account with the CBN that nobody can access. If the purpose is to pay directly from Federal Government as the user, the lessee of the road, to the account that belongs to the sukuk holders through their trustees. Some people may like to ask a question here that, but they have been paying even before the completion of the road. Yes, that was possible because of the structure that we used, and that is forward EJAR. You can actually start payment even before the actual use of the asset. It will now require from the two of you to agree on how to amend the period of the enjoyment of the usufruct and the rent that will be payable on those periods of time. So that is what will be needed. But there's nothing wrong in paying in advance even before the actual before you start enjoying the usufruct. Just as the example I gave you of somebody who wants to rent a shop or an apartment and the landlord does not have money, you can pay before the apartment or the shop is ready for use. Number 12, the Central Bank of Nigeria as paying agent transfers the periodic. You know, federal government pays to an account with CBN. All what the CBN does is to transfer those amounts of money to sukuk holders on the scheduled date. Oh, 6 months, 3 months, oh, federal government has paid. Oh, trustee, please take the money. This is the money. But you see, for efficiency purpose, if the government, CBN should pay the trustees, FBN Quest, STA trustees, then they will now be using their own account to pay. It will be cumbersome. So CBN will pay directly to sukuk holders on behalf of the trustees. There's nothing wrong with that. So instead of making it two steps, it's just one step. Federal government paying to CBN as a paying agent. As a paying agent also, it pays to sukuk holders. Number 13, the issuer, the SPV, gives notice of the exercise that is at maturity of the purchase undertaking, and the FGN as obligor gives notice of exercise of the sale undertaking at maturity. The issuer, that is the trustee, the SPV, they will now tell the federal government that, okay, this is the end of the road. We are not interested in keeping the roads with us, so we are selling it to you, and based on your previous purchase undertaking, we are ready to sell the roads to you. At maturity of the sukuk, the issuer or trustee exercises the purchase undertaken and the roads are purchased by the Federal Government of Nigeria. The purchase amount is utilized to redeem the principal investment made by investors. Look at this last one, it may generate controversy. The purchase amount is utilized to redeem the principal investment made by investors. What normally happens is that at maturity, they are at liberty to say we want to agree at a price that will be acceptable to both of us. But at the same time, because Matthew, we are talking of a market that is used to fixed income. Bond market is a market of fixed income. So when we are structuring sukuk, that one must be kept in mind. It is not a completely equity-based market that we will wait for the market, we will wait for the profit, then we decide on how to. So they can actually prefix and say, this is the amount that we are going to sell, although they are not selling now. If they should sell now, that will be problematic. But it is just an agreement that when the time comes, this is the amount that we are ready to accept from you. And that would come under what is generally known as the market price. Because a market price includes a price that a purchaser is willing to pay. So that is all about that. And that will be the end of the end of the structure and the end of the sukuk operation and the expiration of the 7-year tenure. Thank you very much once again. And here too, we have just about 15 minutes to Salat al-Dhuhr. Okay. Okay. Well, this is a very big question that will require a lengthy time to answer, but let me be brief as far as I can. You see, this issue has its basis on the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that says that the Prophet ﷺ naha an bay'atayni fi bay'a, and in a version naha an safaqatayni fi safaqa. This version was reported by Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal, and the two narrations are authentic. That the Prophet ﷺ prohibited combination of two sales in one, or two contracts or two transactions in one. Scholars from centuries, they have analyzed, they have explained what exactly is meant by combining two contracts in one or two sales in one. Some of them are of the opinion that it is actually talking about bay' al-'ayna, that is sale and buyback. You sell and instantly you rebuy with the intention of increasing the deferred amount so that you will give me less and take more at the agreed upon time, which is called buyback or sellback. Another interpretation is that, oh, what the Prophet actually prohibited is for you to offer a single product or a single asset, but quoting two different prices. That if you are paying now, it is 10,000 naira. But if you'll be paying by installment, no, it will amount to 15 or 20,000 naira. To some people, that is the meaning of bay'a tayni fi bay'a. To some other scholars, it looks like that, but with a difference. It is for you to quote two different prices for a particular product, and the two of you will accept, offer and accept the offeror will offer, and the other side will accept without indicating which of the two prices have you agreed upon. And this is the most popular interpretation of that hadith. This was noted by Al-Imam Abu Ubaid al-Qasim al-Sallam, the author of Al-Kitab al-Amwal, which is perhaps the first book that we know on Islamic financial contracts in Islam. This is also supported by a very notable scholar of the Maliki school, Ibn Abdul Barr, in his work, Al-Istidkar, and so on and so forth. That what the hadith is prohibiting is for you to combine two sales by offering a product quoting two prices without agreeing instantly at the time of offer and acceptance on which of the two prices you have accepted or you have offered. So this is the most popular interpretation of that hadith. So there are many interpretations. This is just the bottom line. I want to suppose that the person raising this question wants to interpret the hadith to mean do not combine ijara and sale, but this is very wrong. With due respect, this is very wrong. I don't know of any scholar that is interpreting it that way. They can never do, because it is in hadith of the Prophet the hadith of Jabir ibn Abdullah radiallahu anhuma. Jabir was with the Prophet on a journey, and Jabir offered to sell his camel to the Prophet, or the Prophet offered to buy the camel, and Jabir accepted. So that's a sale contract. But instantly, Jabir inserted another contract by saying, okay, but since we are on a journey now, I will sell it to you, it becomes yours, but you will have to give it to me to ride until we get to Medina. So that means it's like creating an ijara after a sale. So generally speaking, you see the issue of combination of two sales or two contracts is a very wide concept under Islamic law, under Islamic jurisprudence. But basically, there is nothing wrong in what has been done in FGN Sukuk and what is being done globally, because the interpretation of bay'a tayni fi bay'a has nothing to do with the structure that is being used for Sukuk. That is the summary of it. I have to check my schedule. I'm afraid next. Well, what will happen offline? Let us discuss. I will have to go to my schedule, see what I have next week, on which day of next week, and we will agree. Then you pass it to all others. But make sure the mistake of today does not repeat itself. When you have registered for 1,000, it's very bad to bar more than 900 from getting on board. So please try to rectify that. But we are almost concluding. Okay. Yes, that is the position of the International Islamic Faith Academy. It's very correct. But it should also be noted that the Sharia Committee, the Sharia Council, which is an equally very respected Sharia authority, the Sharia Council of IOFI, Accounting and Auditing Organization of Islamic Financial Institutions, has actually held a different position. Their own position is in line with what we have done in Nigeria and what is being done, maybe more than 90% of sukuk issuances in the world, that when it comes to ijara sukuk, because in ijara, sale-based, lease-based, ijara lease-based, sale-based, you can fix your income. It's not like a partnership based structure. So the summary to answer this question, yes, it's very correct. That is the position held by OIC Fiqh Academy, but other scholars around the world, including principally Ahofi Sharia Council, actually disagreed with them. And you see, in matters like this, it's a matter of jihad. And as far as you are not just whimsically choosing any of the views, you analyze their positions, you analyze their authorities. And to us in Nigeria, we found the position of IOFI is more correct, and that is being followed all over the world by maybe more than 90% jurisdictions. You see, what OIC is saying is that they want to guide against guaranteeing the capital, which we all agreed on. We all agreed on that you cannot guarantee. But when we talk of market price, that they said, for example, IOFI says, what is market price? A market price is a price that is determined by demand and supply, and is a price that a purchaser is willing to pay. Is a price that a purchaser eventually will agree to pay. Now, it is the purchaser that is agreeing that, okay, if that is what you want, I will buy it. So we can further analyze this more than this, but because of the shortage of time, answering directly is that yes, AUFI has a position and other Sharia authorities in the world have a position. Okay, that's a very good one. That's a very good one. You see, in the structure that is being used, ijara, I will give you a very clear example. If I come to you now and say, I want to rent your house, I want to take the lease of your property, would you ask me from where are you going to get money to pay me? What you need is to be sure that I have a job, I have a source of income, and so on and so forth. But whether I'm going to use my salary to pay, or maybe my father or my mother or my friend is going to pay on my behalf, it's not your business. All what you need is for me to be able to pay you when it is a lease or sale-based transaction. Now let's try to apply that to FGN Sukuk now. I agree with the questioner. The ideal situation, the most expected thing, is for us to see that those roles, after completion, are told, people will pay toll gate. And from the income generated from that one, they will now be paying the sukuk holders their rent. But it is the federal government choice. For political reasons, we used to have toll gates in Nigeria. A government came and dismantled them. I think it will be like a political suicide for another government to rush into reconstructing toll gates without taking account of the political implications. I'm not speaking on behalf of government, but I'm just talking to you as an academic, the way I read the situation. So federal government has chosen to say, don't worry, whether we collect money from Nigerians or we don't collect no money from Nigerians, we are responsible for the roads. We must provide roads for Nigerians, and we will pay. It is our duty to provide roads for Nigeria, whether we get toll gate from them or not. So in from the Sharia perspective, that's not an issue. It's not an issue. It varies. It varies. The minimum, I think, is either 1,000 or 10,000. I'm not sure. Because we are Sharia experts, we are not financial experts, and we are not promoters. All these questions can be better answered by those who promoted. They know how they were going to sell, how much, and the way. But I think it is either 1,000 or 10,000 naira as the minimum per unit. Another question is, what was the other question? Okay, the percentage of return, yes, like I, it also varies, it varies. You know why it varies? Because that is why majority of issuances in the world are using this ijara. Because it gives you a lot of freedom to say, this is what I want, I can fix my renters. When you put something on lease or on sale, nobody will tell you that you must sell at so-so-so or you must lease at so-so-so. It is you that will be coming. If others are saying, come and rent my roads at 11.6% of the construction price, you can say, no, I won't sell you for less than 20. If they are ready to take it, fine. If they are not ready, they won't. So what our government is doing, I believe, is that taking cognizance of the environment. You know, federal government of Nigeria is not dealing alone with Sukuk. It's dealing with all instruments of the capital market. The same way they issue Sukuk, they are also issuing bonds. They are also issuing CBN, is issuing trust rebates and the rest. So they will have to be looking at what is obtainable there, what is payable there, and they will now offer that, okay, for Sukuk rent, I know this is not interest, this is what I'm prepared to pay. It may say 11%, 16%, 10%, 15%. If it's acceptable to investors, that is why it must be clearly stated in the prospectus. They will clearly state it in the beginning that when we take lease of those roads, this is the amount of profit of rent that we are going to pay. If you agree with them, you buy. If you don't agree, you go away. So it's not a Sharia issue at all. No problem. Accept. Approach. Where you are. That is my supervising FGN Sukuk. Yes, yes, yes. Presently, FGN Sukuk is being supervised in terms of Sharia governance by the Financial Regulation Advisory Committee of Experts. That is what is known in other countries as Sharia Advisory Council of the Central Bank of Nigeria. So they are responsible for studying, reviewing, accepting or rejecting any structure that is forwarded, put forward by the issuer. That is the Debt Management Office. So they are the one responsible for that. So they are made up of purely Sharia scholars. This will be the last question, my brother. It's 1 p.m. here. And I think it is time for your Asri also in... Are you in Dammam or Zahran? No, Zahran and Dammam are not the same. You know, I'm a Saudi trained. No, they are not the same. The Haran is a unit under the man. Okay. So, you know, it's like saying Ibadan is the same as Oyo State. Is that correct? Okay. Well, the question, what was the question? Of a subscription, yes. This time around, they were looking for 150, they got more than 600 billion. Is that the question? Yes. No, you know there is a very high level of transparency and disclosure in Sukuk. It's a major requirement. Immediately, the same week, they have announced that for this issue, for this issuance, the highest that we can take, they have expanded it. Instead of 150 billion, we have allowed them as the supervising authority, area supervising authorities, to say that if you can get, you know, roads are many in Nigeria. They have identified roads that are worth 150. But if they can quickly get to some other roads that are in the pipeline waiting for funding, they can equally merge it and add it to the current issue. But if there are no roads available, they must return the money back to the investors. And this time around, they were able to get, I think, about just extra 15 or 16 billion naira. So they will be able to take up to 160 or 162, I think. So that is the maximum of roads available now for this issuance. All the remaining 400 and something, or almost 500 billion, must have been returned or are in the process of being returned to various investors. Now, sorry, we couldn't take your money this time around. We wait for another issuance. Wayako. عليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته. وإياكم. آمين 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 وإياكم. Thank you. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.